session, Judge Ross, Judge Connolly, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Please be seated. And good morning to this September 21 panel of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The first matter on for oral argument this morning is Delwood Farm versus City of Grant. We understand that counsel for one of the parties is not present with us. We are going to proceed with our oral argument in any event. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes to present your argument. Ordinarily, you would also receive 5 minutes of rebuttal. So unless you want to argue against yourself, you'll just have 15 minutes to argue today. With that, please do state your name as you commence your argument so we can keep track of the argument on our audio recording of the proceedings. And sir, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. We are here before you today because the respondent, the City of Grant, seeks to avoid its burden under the 1974 easement that's discussed at length in the briefs here. The argument that they advance is that the Marketable Title Act ended this easement agreement in spite of their ongoing and continuous use of the roadway and possession. The trial court cited the Marketable Title Act 541, subdivisions 1 and 5, for the proposition that this easement had been terminated because there was no re-recording of the easement within 40 years. Our argument begins with the fact that the statute itself must be read as a whole in its total context. And every statute is an expression of legislative intent and will. And to determine the intent and will of the legislature, you have to read the statute as a whole. Every clause needs to be construed in the context of the other clauses in the statute.
So, do I pronounce it right, Mr. Reichert?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't identify myself. It's James Reichert, R-E-I-C-H-E-R-T.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reichert. So obviously you want us to take a look at subdivision 6, you know, the exception. Well, I've got another subdivision, and I'm sorry that opposing counsel is not here, but, you know, that's a whole other story. But my question is, and I know it's a little bit of a haymaker, although it might wind up helping your side. And the question is, I assume as we sit here today, your client still owns this property that the road's on.
Yes.
In looking at some of the case law that my clerks and I have taken a look at and in interpreting the Marketable Title Act, I have some concerns that it doesn't apply at all.
I understand the court's position on that, and I recognize that. I agree that that is a perspective on this case and the application of that statute.
And looking at the cases that sort of have interpreted, one thing they say is, you know, when they sort of define source of title, and in particular, who gets to invoke the benefits of the Marketable Title Act, in several cases, referring back to Wilkelman, which you've all cited in the briefs, is only those who possess a title which complies with the conditions of the MTA are entitled to invoke its aid. And the source of title has been defined as recorded fee simple ownership. And I know there are many things in dispute, and I know the city certainly wants your client to pay for the upkeep of the road. But if they don't own the road, I don't see how, speaking for myself and not my treasured colleagues, how they get to even invoke the rights of the MTA. And I understand which you're saying there's an exception that applies that we win. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, because that's something that's been troubling me quite a bit. along with a lot of other things about this case, not the least the fact is that the counsel for the respondent is not even in the building.
So, Your Honor, I recognize that problem when I was briefing this. That isn't how the case was presented at the trial court or decided at the trial court. So we're sort of stuck with the facts and the way that they were presented at that level. However, in this case, the City of Grant has invoked the Marketable Title Act. Whether it's properly invoked or not remains a decision perhaps for this court or for a rehearing at the trial court. But under the Marketable Title Act that they're trying to invoke, I don't think they win. I think it's that simple.
Well, but on the premise, though, before we even get to whether they win under the Act, is there any document or anything in the record that would allow for the conclusion that the city ever had colorable title in fee simple?
No. Fee simple has always remained with my client and his predecessor because it was simply an easement grant. There was no fee simple transferred.
So I was troubled by it as well. I was surprised I didn't see any mention of fee simple either in your brief or in your opponent's brief to sort of tease this issue out. What do you suggest we do with that?
Well, Your Honor, I understand the court's perspective on that. If the court feels that that issue was not properly resolved by the trial court, then the resolution is to send it back for further findings or further testimony. But the case is before you on the facts that the parties have brought before the trial court and now have brought before this court. And so,
right, but if one of the facts that is a premise to the application of the Marketable Title Act is ownership or at least colorable ownership title, some source of title that would indicate fee ownership, I'm not sure how we get past the first step. If we don't, there's not a finding by the district court, there's not even a presumption by the parties or any assertion of ownership of fee simple.
That's correct.
And it feels like, based upon the way the parties have described the tract and the history of the land, I was hard-pressed to find any hint where the city might have even suggested any basis where it might have been a moment. Oh, here's where the city might have found a colorable title instrument of some type.
And the only reply I can make is that they do raise this argument under, I think it's Statute 160, about dedication of the road. I don't agree that dedication transfers fee simple, though.
Well, the case law is pretty clear that it doesn't. I mean, there's plenty of case law out there that it can, but generally speaking, presumption is that it doesn't.
Correct. So if the court finds that we haven't addressed that, haven't addressed what the court is telling me is a fundamental issue from its viewpoint, then I think the matter has to be sent back down because there isn't anything in the record that would allow that matter to be adjudicated here.
Mr. Eckert, to follow up on that, and by the way, you don't need to apologize for your late introduction yourself because you'll still be ahead of Respondent's Counsel today on that issue. Since you're the plaintiff, right, appellant, it was your client that presented the issue to the district court. And so, and I didn't see, and you said the parties argued it based on the Marketable Title Act. What I'm trying to understand is that the judge resolved the issue based on what the parties said the law was that applies to our request. And since it was your client's request, I assume there was no alternative argument made for why your client ought not to be responsible for this assessment, other than that easement language from 1974.
Correct. The Marketable Title Act wasn't raised in any of the pleadings. It wasn't raised by the City of Grant as an affirmative defense or anything of that sort. It is, so the way this matter was heard by the court was the parties agreed to a briefing schedule, and briefs were due, I believe, on December 17. They were simultaneously filed. So no one saw anyone else's brief or argument before it was filed with the court. But that was the end of the briefing. Now, the City of Grant did supply a day later. On Friday was the 17th. On Monday, they did supply an affidavit from an engineer or something. It was inconsequential to the case. But they, yeah, that was why the Marketable Title Act wasn't addressed in my brief, because I didn't see it until their brief was filed, but then the briefing was closed. But they did not raise that in the Marketable Title Act. They did not raise that in their pleadings. They didn't raise it as an affirmative defense or any other way.
Well, it seems that even if the briefing was closed, you'd still have the opportunity to address the court, whether it's in post-trial motions or otherwise, to emphasize that the lack of application of marketable title, the Marketable Title Act, by the invoking party if there's no fee.
Yes, I agree that that method could have been employed.
So, Mr. Riker, was there an alternative method by which your client could have won by the district court that would have had no reference to the Marketable Title Act?
Well, with no reference to the Marketable Title Act, then I'm going to have to adopt Judge Connolly's position here, which says because of this fee issue, they don't get to raise any issue under the Marketable Title Act. They don't even get that far. That would be the argument that I would have made, would be Judge Connolly's argument.
And then, kind of extrapolating further, I mean, if the Marketable Title Act doesn't apply, your position would be, well, here's the easement. The easement's clear. Have a nice day.
Yes, we think that that's perfectly fair because the city of Grant has enjoyed this easement since 1974. I mean, they built a road there. They've maintained the road there. They have the free, unfettered use of that space, and they've had it since 1974. And they've had it under an agreement from 1974 that now they want to keep the good part. We want the easement, but we don't want the burden part. We don't have to pay for this, or we don't want to have to exempt the property from paying for this road. So they sort of want to have their cake and eat it too here.
When was the road originally improved? When was it developed?
Well, it was developed before 1974 because the easement refers to an existing roadway there. But we don't know more details about that.
And does the record indicate today, I mean, is this like a paved road that you plow?
Today it is, yes, and has been for decades.
Pre-87 when the easement was filed?
Oh, yes, I think it was paved before pre-87. You know, our easement that we're talking about is the 1974 easement.
Right, I got it.
There is some discussion of this 1987 easement, which really is not the same easement. It's not the same easement area. And so I think it's a red herring. I don't think it applies to our situation. And our claim arises only under that 1974 easement.
My understanding, and correct me, I must be wrong, at least from your perspective, that the later easement was essentially a grant of the same power to the city, only without the language about the payment.
Well, it may have been a grant of the same power, but it was not a grant of the same area. It's not the grant of the same area.
There's the same trail.
It's not. It's similar, but not all encompassing. In other words, these two easements do not lie on top of each other. They are different.
So there's more than one trail?
I can't say that there's more than one trail, but I can.
What do you mean by there?
But the legal description for the 1974 easement covers a broader area than the legal description for the 1987 easement. It's bigger.
The earlier one is bigger.
Yes.
So it just covers less of the same road that the 1974 easement involved?
That's my understanding of it, yes.
Which would make sense if the road was widened, I suppose.
I can't explain the differences to the court. I can only tell you that it is different. And counsel in their argument at one point says it's the same, but then on the next page they say, no, it's not. It's not identical. But it is not identical.
But I assume the city's... I assume the record indicates that the city is plowing the whole road.
Yes.
Not just, you know, two-thirds of it.
No, you're right. No, they maintain the entire roadway.
Gracious of them.
Yes.
Mr. Eckert, responded, the judge didn't really analyze this, but a couple times, I think in their brief, I don't know if you alluded to this, made reference to the point that Grant didn't sign that 1974 easement. Is that important to you, or if not, why is that not?
No, it's not important for two reasons. Number one, they raised that issue regarding the 74 easement, but then they want to claim the 1987 easement, you know, somehow is more valid. That wasn't signed by the City of Grant either. So that argument is just nonsense. And signing it is really a manifestation of acceptance. Well, when you go out and pave the road and plow the road, that's manifestation of acceptance. And so it's I think it's disingenuous to make that argument that somehow it doesn't count. It does count.
It might affect the timing of things if we're talking about 40 years. If there had been a signing by the city or the township back when 74 or in the 80s when the second easement came through, then at least we know when the clock would start on the 40-year period. And I gather the record, I didn't see anything in the record that would indicate when does the city begin to maintain the road. I think that would
pretty much right away, pretty much in 1974, within a year there, because there was a road there. I think there was some already municipal activity on that road, and that's how the easement came about. But I can't say that to the court under oath because right. I don't know that for a fact. But that's my belief of the evolution of this.
Well, that was my point. Just there didn't appear to be anything in the record that would, if it is the behavior of the city and the maintenance of the road that would indicate acceptance in the absence of a signature, that's the part that would be fuzzy if we're trying to begin the point of the clock for the 40-year period.
And Your Honors, my time is up, but if you would, I do have a response to that 40-year question.
You could briefly respond. You may.
Okay. And so, Your Honor, what I did was I just kind of calculated this. So this easement is dated September 10 of 1974. It was recorded September 17. I'm going to count 40 years from September 10. That gets us to September 9 of 2014. So there's the 40 years. And under Sampere, and I know we've stepped away from that line of argument, but nevertheless, the possession must begin by September 9 of 2014. Well, their brief admits that it was gone on for decades, is the quote that I cited. So we're well within that. The possession has occurred within that 40-year window. And then we get out to September 9 of 2020, and that would be 6 years. Our suit was begun on April 20th of 2020. So I think we're well within any of those calculations, no matter how you slice it.
Thank you, Mr. Reichert.
Anything else, Your Honors?
Doesn't appear to be any other questions from the panel.
All right. Thank you very much.
The matter is submitted, and you'll be hearing from the court one way or the other.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to appear here today.
Thank you. Thank you for your briefing.